So please welcome Reverend Dr. David Alt.
Good morning. Happy birthday. Let's go all outside and pick up some trash. All right, how many of you have a program? This is an activity. I need you to do it. So I'm going to ask you to do something that no one has ever asked you to do before. Are you game?
Yes.
Oh, you're so easy. All right. What I want you to do is I want you to open the program, and I want you to put it right in front of your face. Hold it up like this. And I want you to keep it there until I tell you. So this program, right in front of your face, hold it up. Block your vision. Don't look at me. Hold it up. This program now obstructs your view, correct?
Yes.
And so this program, keep holding it up, represents all of the immediacy of the angst and anxiety and problems that exist in your world. So this is the worry about not being able to pay the bills on time. This is the diagnosis that you are dealing with at the doctor's office. This is the conflict with your children and your grandchildren. This is worrying about whether or not as you age you're going to be relevant or not, or who's going to take care of me. This is you being concerned about whether or not you're lovable or attractive enough or too tall or too thin or too fat or too this or too that. All of the things that consume your mind, just keep looking at the program, hold it up, and now consider that even while this is up, that there's something beyond these focused issues and these focused words. Would you not agree that there's something beyond that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so then you know this phrase, I can't see the forest for the
trees.
And you can bring it down. That was a tree. That was a tree in front of your face. And what happens is that we are untrained. And by untrained, I mean when we have the unconscious adaptation to go towards the immediacy of the problem and forget the fact that there is an infinite amount of options constantly there, then we are tree people. Meaning that we are people who can only singularly focus on what is an issue in front of us. But what would happen if you and I became forest people? And that's my goal today. I want to remind you that you are already a forest person. But to inhabit that forest nature and to embody that means that you and I have to do a little work. We have to do less untrained thinking and more trained thinking. Trained thinking simply means what the title of the talk is today is that everything happens twice. Everything happens twice. First in mind and then in experience. And as we understand that spiritually and philosophically, it can be maddening for us, those of us on a spiritual path who are really trying to practice this principle and to the best of our ability be forest people. All forest people requires is that as these issues are up before us, we also unilaterally hold up the idea, we pivot to the notion that there are an infinite amount of options. There are an infinite amount of options. But if I don't understand that, or if I don't practice that, then I become a singular tree person, and everything happens twice. So as I worry about this thing, as I become anxious about this thing, as I converse about this thing, as I draw friends who want to eat lunch over this thing, and that becomes my lifestyle, then that thing only magnifies and it reoccurs. And as it happens in my mind, it continues to happen in form. And as it happens in my mind, it continues to happen in form. And what I know is that you and I are designed to be forest people. How do I know that? Because spiritually we are told that what we are the emanation, the vessel, the instrument of that which is source, or God, or infinite intelligence. Whatever word, whatever phrase, whatever category of speech and language works for you in order to describe something that's indescribable. Because that which is God, which is beyond gender, which is the source of all life, which is the backbone of all creation, which is infinite supply, is the all. And if it is the all, then you and I are what? We are a part of that all. Which means that we have the capacity to move beyond the immediacy of any human circumstance. If we but focus and pivot our thoughts on the fact that what we are forest people who dwell in infinite potentiality. What makes that move from just bumper sticker wisdom into practicality? What will actually make you this morning be reminded of and put into embodiment the fact that you are a walking, breathing vessel of infinite potentiality? What will really drive that home? Because often when we talk about these things, we nod our heads in agreement. We say, yes, yes, I get it, I understand it. But the moment that we walk out of this building, we revert right back into being tree people. And so on this Earth Day, let's move beyond just the singular tree and find what it is that we need to do individually and collectively in order to be forest people. What are the characteristics of forest people? They understand and know that whatever is going on in the human experience is what I call small r reality. Small r reality, what does that mean? I would never go up to someone who is having a human experience and tell them, wow, how unspiritual of you. Or, that's not real. I would not do any of that kind of spiritual bypass that we talk about, but I would understand that the reality of that is true for them. Because in their level of self-awareness, and in their activity of mind, and whatever practice that they are engaged in, that's what they know to be reality. But the more that we step foot on this spiritual path and the more that we continue to walk that, we understand that there is a capital R reality. That capital R reality is the thing that allows us to look at the sky on a cloudy day and to realize that the cloud is not the deadline. The cloud is not the finish line. The cloud is not the end. The cloud is not the period. It is the comma. That there is something beyond. And in order for you and I to get to the place in consciousness where we automatically go to that forest nature, then that takes some work. And I wonder what it would be to entice you to do more of that. What if I said that the forest is the place where your provision lies? Who doesn't love some provision, right? Who doesn't love to be in the energy and to dwell in the all-sustaining supply of provision? But provision is equated to a forest consciousness, which understands that whatever is happening right now is just an opportunity. Seriously. We're the ones that put labels and degrees on whether or not it's difficult or easy. That which is the source knows nothing of labels. It knows nothing of the differentiation between those things. It's simply the all. And as we profess to say that that's what we want, as we profess to hunger for this all-sustaining provision, then what are you and I willing to do with regards to our practice in moving away from this in order to become more of this? And you know, sometimes as we're beginning, because maybe we're very, very well versed in this, and all that I'm asking is that maybe even today you do this. Just a little bit, you know, a little consideration. And so the forest represents provision. It represents the all. That's not new to anybody here. In fact, if you've done any kind of spiritual study, if you've read any books, every wise sage, philosopher, teacher from the dawn of time that has entered into this arena of developing consciousness has told us that time and time again, that what is available to us is unilateral to the way in which we think. It is done unto us as we believe. As a person thinketh, so that they are. And again, having been in this field for well over 30 years, I'm continuously fascinated by what makes some people move and run without without abandonment into that forest nature, and what makes other people hold on to their tree? And so this morning, understanding that if everything happens twice, what will allow us then to consider that greater nature? That greater nature of the forest knows nothing about age. It knows nothing about past history. It knows nothing about what you've done before. All that its activity is built upon is what you choose now in the immediacy of this moment. Do you choose to practice this particular forest nature? Do you tend to practice that? So as I look back and I think about some of the most influential pieces of information that I've got, I love a teacher by the name of Thomas Troward. Anybody ever read any Thomas Troward? Thomas Troward was an Englishman that lived in India in the early 1900s. He was a judge in India, and then when he retired and moved back to England, he began to pour himself into the study of metaphysics and the power of the mind. Thomas Troward is attributed to being the first person to really put down into words what a creative process means. A creative process simply means everything happens twice. That in mind, in consciousness, I'm not talking about the brain is the vehicle of mind, but in mind, in consciousness, which is limitless and boundless, which we all have, that there is the ability to choose. And then from that choosing, there is a part within us, the subconscious, that just receives what it is that we choose. So you can wake up today and you can say, the world is on my side. Everything that I do today, every corner that I turn, every interaction that I have, elevates me more and more into my divine purpose. Or you can wake up today and go, ugh, another day. And guess what? It's the same day, right? It's the same 24-hour capsule. But you and I are greeting that particular day with whatever consciousness we bring to the altar of that experience. And so when we understand that there is no wiggle room in this particular law, don't you love wiggle room? We're always trying to find wiggle room, right? But you don't understand my issue. The law is just operative. The forest is just there. It's my relationship to that. And so Thomas Troward put in, together in brilliant words and in design language to try to describe the fact that from choice then to the receivership of the subconscious, we get the activity of form. And not only is that true for us as the individual, it's true for the universal. That in the book of Genesis, when it was let that there be light, that the declarative nature of that, let there be light, was a command, a choice that was launched into that creative process, and there was light. So you and I do that every single day. We go, let there be a great day, or let there be a blank day. Because it's the same universal and individual law that's operative and working. What makes us want to care enough about our advancement, about our expansion? What makes us care enough to want to do this work diligently? What makes us care enough to want to be forest people? So there was a woman, a French woman, who lived right here in New York City in the early 1900s, who somehow got a hold of Thomas Troward's writing, and she became a fan. So much so that she would write these letters to Thomas Troward, and she would say, I want to study with you. And those letters would travel to England, and he would write back, and he would say, I don't do that. And then she would write him letters, and she would say, I want to study with you. And he would write back, I don't do that. I'm retired. I just write. I just teach. And she would not let up. She became so captivated by this one singular statement that it became her personal mantra, and she would say it every day, morning, noon, night. She would write it out. She would focus. She would memorize it. It would be a part of her forest nature, and it said, my mind is a center of divine operation. Now, not just any operation, divine operation. My mind is a center of divine operation. The divine operation is always for expansion. And a fuller expression. And this means that the production of something beyond what has gone before. This woman's name was Genevieve Brin. Now, can you see how evolutionary Genevieve's mind was? Was Genevieve a tree person or a forest person? She was a forest person. And she would say every day, my mind is a center of divine operation. The divine operation is always for expansion and fuller expression. And this means the production of something beyond what has gone before. How many of us even consider something beyond what has gone before? Or how many of us just conform to what is, and we will take that? We will accept the breadcrumb when there's a whole banquet table. But how do you and I get to the banquet table? We have to understand that there is a banquet table. And I'm not talking about just individual gain. I'm talking about the elevation of consciousness. This isn't about how can I get more. This is about understanding that when you accept the task of becoming a forest person, that you elevate the planet. You bring healing to the planet because we are all one. So my mind is a center of divine operation, and that which is that forest nature then leads me to the first P, which is provision. Provision. How many of us wake and think about, I don't have enough? And as we think about, I don't have enough, if everything happens twice, then what happens? I don't have enough. It's not that you and I are good or bad. It's not that we're right or wrong. It's just that this particular law is what? It's impartial. When I put the seed in the soil, this is also the creative process. When I put the seed in the soil on this earth day, does the soil go, God, I hate that seed. That seed is nasty. No, the soil does what? Just takes the seed. It takes the seed and it nurtures the seed. And as long as there are nutrients and as long as there's enough water, that soil then does its job. And whatever that seed is it brings it to fruition. And it's the same thing with our internal creative process. And I know that you know this. But however, what is it then from a seed perspective that you and I keep planting? What is it from that singular tree conversation? How amazing would it be if you found a forest buddy? And by finding a forest buddy, you say, all right, here are the rules. When you and I go to the diner to eat breakfast, when you and I see each other however many times in a month, the rule is this. As a forest buddy, we can only talk about the divine operation. We can only talk about what's working. We can only talk about, as Genevieve Brin said, something beyond what has gone before. That's the rule. That's the rule of my forest buddy, is that I'm not going to sit and complain and you're not going to sit and complain because we've already done that. We already know each other's business. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about infinite potentiality. Would you be game to do that? And I want you to watch how uncomfortable that is. Because a lot of us have been brought up in this kind of idea that, well, that's bragging, or that's boasting, or as some of my friends from the South when I was growing up used to say, now don't you go getting beyond your raisin. And so it's time for us to go get beyond our raisin and to begin to look at what is required for us to be forest people. And see what happens then is the more that I in tune and attune and intend with that as my purpose, guess who shows up? Forest people. And you know what I want? You want to know what's so beautiful about the creative process? Is when you surround yourself with people who are doing the work, you have a tendency to what? Do the work. When you surround yourself with people who are conformist, who only want to talk about the tree, the issue, why I can't, I can't do this, I can't do that. If that's what you surround yourself with, what is your tendency to do? To return to that like a boomerang back. And then we walk out, and then we wonder why our energy feels so drained. When in point of fact, we have the opportunity to consistently pivot to the vision of being forest provision. The next thing then about it happens, everything happens twice, is purpose. Because everybody talks about, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? What's my purpose? I want to tell you that purpose is not vocational. It's not how you earn your money. Purpose, again, is consciousness. And Joseph Campbell said it best when he said, follow your bliss. And how do you follow your bliss? Because now many of you right there, I did that and I lost all my money. You know, as a creative, I can't really make any money doing what it is that I love, so I have to do this, so I'm not on purpose. So again, that's a tree mentality. Because if there is infinite potentiality, then what is ours to do in order to be on purpose? And I will tell you, and it's one of the things that I shared with all of those who are the pledgers here at Unity of New York yesterday. We had an all-day seminar. And I said to them, it's invaluable that you understand what your values are. If I walked up to you on the street and I said, tell me your values, would you be able to tell me that? Values are things like trust, integrity, prosperity, health, spiritual awakening. It's what you spend your time and your money on. It's also aspirational. It's the things that you feel are lacking, but you really, truly do want some of that. And when you understand what your values are, then that helps you determine what you're going to say yes and what you're going to say no to. It was Oprah who said, I've never really understood what an authentic no or what an authentic yes felt like until I learned how to say no. I never understood what an authentic yes felt like until I learned how to say no. How does one learn how to say no? One determines what their values are. Because every single thing in every moment of every day is pulling for your attention. And you and I certainly don't have the bandwidth to do it all. And so then what do you say yes and what do you say no to? What do you agree to? Because we are a culture many times of over-promising and under-delivering. And one of the reasons why we over-promise and under-deliver is because we're not clear on what our values are. When I was a kid growing up in very cliched poverty circumstances like many, many people on the planet, I would climb up a tree. And I would live in that tree, and I would read books, and I would read autobiographies, and this sense of adventure grew into me. So adventure became one of my values. Adventure was the thing that I would say yes to. I wanted to see the world. I had no means to see the world. But when I said yes to adventure, ways and possibilities began to open up. And as I was traveling, as I was growing up, somewhere in the 90s, I read a phrase by a travel writer. His name is Doug Boyd, and he said, the most powerful mantra that you can ever say in life is, I'm available. Then look out. Because if you're sincere, your whole world is going to change. So guess what? I saw that. I was electrified by that. And so I started to say, I'm available to adventure. And suddenly I started getting these calls and people offering to allow me to lead trips to sacred sites if I could get X number of people to come with me. And if I could get those people to come, then my trip would be free. And I'm like, hey, sign me up. And I started to see amazing places all around the world that I would never have had the opportunity to do that had I not made myself available to this value of adventure. So that value then led me in the early 2000s to Cambodia. And some of you know this story, but when I landed in Cambodia in 2004, which I'd never been there, something visceral was starting to happen inside of me. Back to then, there was a definite delineation between the haves and the have-nots. The have-nots were the local Cambodian people. The haves were us tourists. And you could look around and you could see immense poverty. You could look around and you could see the struggles. And yet you could feel this beauty and this poise among these people. And it dawned on me that when I landed there in 2004, it had only been 30 years since their civil war. Are you familiar with the movie The Killing Fields? That's the civil war that happened in Cambodia, when one man began to create a regime to take over that country, and he literally forced any educated person, any person wearing glasses, any person who owned a business, any person who was in the creative arts, any person that posed a threat to submitting themselves to his rule, he would march them into the rice fields and he would work them until they died. 2 million Cambodian people died during that civil war. It's not a large country. And so in 2004, when I got there, nearly a third of the Cambodians, that generation, was gone. And yet here they were smiling, here they were poised, here they were very sweet within their heart. And I was very drawn to that. And so were the people that were on this trip with me, and they said to me, let's do something, I want to help. That's not a new question. Many people who are empathetic immediately want to do something, they're drawn to the circumstance. But it's hard sometimes when you're just there touring to do a one-off, because I'm not a big fan of that. I'd rather find sustainable things. And so I was like, what's the hybrid here? So I went to the guide that we had been assigned, and I said, I have these people, we want to do something, but I want you to take us to where the greatest need is. And he went, really? And I said, yes. And he said, the greatest need is the Tonle Sap Lake. And on the riverbed there, during the dry season, the water recedes, and that's where you'll find the immigrants and the refugees and those who are starving. You'll find the landmine victims. When you think about Princess Diana, her last initiative was excavating the landmines in Cambodia from the Civil War that were still buried in fields. And so I said, okay, and I said, how do we do that? And he explained to me about what kind of food would work best for their indigenous digestive systems. And so we went to these local markets, which were run by families, and we ended up, all 15 of us, we ended up buying 3 markets worth of food run by 3 individual families. That's a lot of food, which meant a lot of vans, which meant a caravan to this location. And he said, before you show up, I've got to find a way to get a message to the matriarch of the village. And this was before cell phones. And so I still don't know how he did it. But by the time we arrived at the Tonle Sap Lake, there were more than 100 children, which he had said, feed the children there. They're the ones who are the worst. Feed those children who are displaced. And when we pulled up and we saw them just sitting uniformly in that dry cake bed surrounded by mud puddles, we began to distribute this food. And it lasted in harmony for about 7 minutes. And then off in the distance, there's this roar of hundreds of other children running who had heard that there was food. And then it just turned into utter chaos. Grabbing, brothers trying to grab extra food for their little sister. Anything that they could do to get this. And when it was all over, we all sort of were breathing heavy, and we looked down and we were covered with these little muddy handprints. And someone in that group said, oh my God, I'm going to keep this because this is the canvas of humanity. And in that moment, I could feel that visceral feeling within my heart starting to magnify, and I felt like I might be having somewhat of a spiritual heart attack, because my heart felt like it was going to burst. And in order to really put words to this, I failed, because what happened on that day on the banks of the Tonle Sap changed my life. Because in that moment, when I was looking for a place to do the ugly cry, I crawled into a pontoon boat into the smelly water of the Tonle Sap Lake, and I began to primally wail. And it wasn't from pity. It was from this inexplicable awareness that those children were me. The child that I was feeding was the child back in Beaumont, Texas, who was up in the tree. And that they were me and I was them, and vice versa. There was no separation there. And in that moment of wailing, I said those words, "I'm available." Not understanding what that would lead to, not understanding what would come from that. And as I fast forward all of these years later, just saying "I'm available" from that value of adventure changed my life and brought upon a whole new value where now global education is one of my values. And I write my values down on a card and I say, "I'm available." I write them on my hand sometimes when I feel as though the demands of life and people wanting my attention and my time, I write my values on my hand and I say, "I'm available." And every single time that I intentionally do that, when I become a forced person, because being a forced person doesn't mean that I know how it's going to happen, then the right and perfect people show up. One of those people is actually here today. My friend Ian Folker from Atlanta is on my foundation children's board. He came here from Atlanta today.
Hi.
Ian's been with me to Cambodia many times. And we got all these systems in place there. We built two schools. These schools have IT tech centers. We're teaching children life skills. We have over 800 children in Cambodia that we serve with free education. And 2 years ago, we were sitting there and we go, "I think it's time to expand." So I went to India. And as I was in India, I had this criteria in my head and my "I'm available" mantra. And as I was walking around, I said, "This is the criteria that needs to be fulfilled." And it ended up happening in a town called Bodh Gaya. I don't know how many of you have been to India or if you've been to Bodh Gaya, but it is actually the birth of Buddhism. In this massive Hindu country, there's this little town called the Bodh Gaya, which is where the Bodhi tree is, which is where Siddhartha gained enlightenment. And in fact, one of the generations of the original tree is still there. And Buddhists from all over the world come to Bodh Gaya. And all my criteria of I need an administrator, I need this, I need this, I need this sign fulfilled, I need to have this intuitive nudging confirmed, every single thing happened. And we just recently went back because we started two after school programs, and one of them is in a slum in the Lakhanpur, India, where these children are sitting in a cow barn, learning. Never had a school before. And in a matter of 7 to 8 months, they're already doing math and algebra and fractions. That's how hungry their minds are. That's how much innately they are forest people. You know, they're not showing up going, "This is a cow barn. I can't learn in this environment." They're saying yes to that. So values, when you understand what your values are, they won't lead you in a direct straight line to what you think you're supposed to do. They're going to zigzag all over the place. They're going to take you to the banks of the Tonle Sap. They're going to take you to India. They're going to take you wherever it is that you need to go in order to learn the nature of your purpose. And finally, the last thing that forced people understand is power. And when I'm talking about power, I'm talking about the kind of power that you think about from electricity, which does what? It connects things, it ignites things. Electricity is impersonal, it's impartial as well. It's the same for everybody. You flip a switch, it comes on, whether it's a slum dweller or whether it's a king. And what we start to understand through this level of power and connectivity is that you are that person, and I am that person, and they are us. It is true that that namaste prayer is the only valid understanding, that there's only one capital R reality, and what you choose to do affects that reality. So I had to laugh because a while ago I saw this meme on social media, and it was one of those memes that sort of gave us permission to say, I ain't dealing with that. And it was, not my circus, not my monkeys. And I saw that and I just laughed. I thought that was so funny. Not my circus, not my monkeys, which simply means what? I don't have anything to do with me. I'm not going to get all caught up in that drama. And I just laughed. I thought that was so funny. And then it hit me in meditation the next day. It is my circus. Those are my monkeys. Because there's only one circus. There's only one circus. There's only one reality. There's only one of us. And so to the degree that you and I become more adaptable to that forest nature, to understanding that the provision is there, the more that we become adaptable to the idea that our purpose is based on our values, and all that we have to do every single day is say, I'm available. I don't need to know the how. Then we are connected to that power, and we begin to see everybody else differently. We begin to see someone's pain, and we understand that the pain that they are experiencing, even right now, isn't isolated. That their pain is my pain. That your worry is my worry. That your victory is my victory. That your awakening is my awakening. And when I get that, that means I have a whole new level of responsibility of how I'm supposed to show up in the world. That means that when I do wake up, the first thing that I commit to is to being a forest person. So I invite you to close your eyes this morning as we move into meditation. There's a little Karen Drucker song I want to lead you in. It's very appropriate for Earth Day. It's very simple. It shows how we are connected. We're going to start with our feet, and it goes up from my feet, I call the healing power. Up from my feet, I call the healing power. Up from my feet, I draw it to my heart. It's already here. I only need to claim it. Up from my feet, I know that I am healed. I want you to sing that with me, and now we're going to say, in through my hands, I call the healing power. You can even hold your hands out, in through my hands. In through my hands, I call the healing power. In through my hands, I draw it from my heart. It's all
back to the earth.
realize that there is no place that we can run to, there is no place to escape from the nature that is God. Sometimes we even have to ask ourselves, why would we want to do that? But when we become consumed by that tree of conformity and anxiety that tells us that there are no options, then we have the tendency to turn our back upon that forest. And so this morning, in whatever way that you use your level of imagination, your relationship with imagery, I invite you to just turn to the forest in your mind. That forest is illuminated. There is brilliant light. There are infinite pathways. There are so many options that it leaves us spellbound with regards to solution. And what we know is that when everything happens twice, my only responsibility is to turn to this in my mind. To turn to this infinite nature that is God. And to say, I see you. I recognize you. I am you. And I welcome all of the solution, all of the value, all of the energy of I am available. I welcome that to take me now and lead me where I may best serve. I observe my resistance, I observe my need to control, I observe my past fears, and I simply observe them and I continue to move beyond. And as I move beyond, I enter more and more and more into the expansive nature of what it means to dwell in that forest of possibility. And I also recognize that I am home. This is the home that I have been homesick for so long. This is where all of the answers to all of the questions and all of the pleading and all of the prayers that have gone from my mouth, this is where they dwell within this land of potentiality. And all that has ever been required was for me to continue to move direction of it. And so I step around now that one single tree of obstacle, that one false thought or idea that says I am incomplete or insufficient or unworthy. And I move into right alignment for why my soul is here. And from that act, I begin to get very clear on what my purpose is. But I must move. I must move in my mind so that I can be able to move in accordance with that in this world. And today is the day that we begin that. Today is the day that that journey takes place. Today is the day that we say yes, and if you will acknowledge that prayer by saying yes out loud on the count of three. One, two, three.
Yes!
And together we say, and so it is.
Amen.
Thank you. things that cause